There have been many mystical orders that claim to possess ancient esoteric knowledge that has survived until the modern day, guarded by secret societies that allegedly utilize these occult secrets for supposed physical vitality, psychic endowment, spiritual enlightenment, and establishing a political agenda. Most, if not all of these orders, trace their origins to the ancient Aryan Magi of Mesopotamia, which is where we get the modern word for magician, and whose esoteric practices were said to have been passed down since the mythical times of Atlantis. Whether that's true or not, what seems to be clear is these Central Asian or Eurasian mystics influenced various cults from Babylon to Egypt, passing on their Kabbalistic knowledge to the Knights Templar, who in turn brought it back into Europe, influencing groups such as the Rosicrucians and Freemasons, which allegedly hold a high degree of political influence across the globe. One of the lesser-known secret societies which held a considerable amount of influence in the 18th century Europe was called the Asiatic Brethren, started in Vienna, Austria. Their foundation paralleled a more popular Rosicrucian order, and while this organization played a significant role in the emergence of Adam Weishaupt's Order of the Bavarian Illuminati, they ceased to exist relatively quickly. The Asiatic Brethren has been one of the critical forerunners of the Golden Dawn and many of its descendants, as well as to be an influential force on occult practitioners such as ceremonial magician Eliphas Levi and P.B. Randolph, who introduced the principles of erotic alchemy to North America, establishing the earliest known Rosicrucian order in the United States. Of course, the Asiatic Brethren were influenced by earlier movements, most notably the Kabbalistic concepts put forth by Sabbatai Zevi, who declared himself Messiah in 1666, who was considered a heretic by Orthodox Judaism for transgressions such as pronouncing the Holy Tetragrammaton in public, breaking dietary laws, engaging in forbidden carnal activities, and wedding Sarah, a young Polish prostitute who proclaimed she would be married by the Messiah. Sabbatai's real impact and charisma stem from the divine acts which he performed, often just after emerging from the dark night of depression or after having sung psalms for hours in a seeming trance-like state of emotional bliss. He also encourages followers to engage in promiscuous activity, and as shocking as they were, Sabbatai proclaimed that the meaning of these paradox acts was obvious to him while he was in ecstasy and utterly inaccessible and heretical even to himself once he had returned to his normal state of being. Despite being banished by local rabbis several times and causing shock and outrage amongst Orthodox Jewish leaders, he and his charismatic wife gained a large following and eventually established their power base in Greece and Turkey. From there, his influence grew further and quickly spread all across Europe. Sabbatai ended up in imprisonment under the Ottoman Sultan, who gave him three choices: to subject himself to trial of his divinity. In other words, if the arrows of the Sultan's archers would miss him, his divine status would be proven. Second, to be beheaded. Or third, to convert to Islam. On the next day, September 16, 1666, which incidentally is also my birthday, Sabbatai came before the Sultan, cast off his Jewish garb, and put a Turkish turban on his head. Thus, his conversion to Islam was accomplished. He covertly continued his practices and teachings in secret to his followers, some of whom also converted and followed him under the protection of Islam. Zevi's impact and popularity was due in no small part to his self-proclaimed prophet, Nathan of Gaza. According to the Jewish scholar Gershom Scholem, It's only through Nathan of Gaza's mystical interpretations of Sabbatai's situation and heretic deeds that the story of this new Messiah gained the mystical depth, the spiritual weight, and Kabbalistic meaning that created the necessary gravitas to turn it into such a strong movement. In fact, it is Nathan of Gaza's peculiar mix of Lurianic Kabbalah, Gnostic interpretation, quotes from the Zohar, and his own mystic explanations that helped turn Sabbateanism into a future, hidden cornerstone of our Western occult lore. Nathan refers to the Messiah's soul as a holy snake among snakes, but keep in mind that the Hebrew word for snake, Nakash, has the same numeric value as the term Messiah. The Sabbatean concept of a snake or dragon in this context is paralleled in the Gnostic teachings of the Ophites, a word that comes from the Greek Ophis, which means serpent. They were members of several Gnostic sects that flourished in the Roman Empire during the 2nd century and for several centuries thereafter. These sects' beliefs differed in various ways, but central to them all was a dualistic theology that opposed a purely spiritual supreme being, who was both the origin of the cosmic process and the highest good, to a chaotic and evil material world. To the Ophites, man's dilemma resulted from his being a mixture of these conflicting spiritual and material elements. Only Gnosis, the esoteric knowledge of good and evil, can redeem man from the bonds of matter and make him aware of the unknown God who is the true source of all being. In their interpretation of the Garden of Eden story, the forbidden fruit was symbolic of the orgasm, and the serpent's temptation was to harness and transmute the sexual energy through esoteric tantric practice, rather than always expelling one's life force in a conventional climax that results in physical procreation. The Ophites regarded the Jehovah of the Old Testament as merely a demiurge or subordinate entity who had created the material world. They attached special importance to the serpent in the biblical book of Genesis because he had enabled man to obtain the all-important knowledge of good and evil that Jehovah had withheld from them. Accordingly, the serpent was a true liberator of mankind, since he first taught men to rebel against Jehovah and seek knowledge of the true unknown God. The Ophites further regarded Christ as a purely spiritual being who, through his union with the man Jesus, taught the saving Gnosis or Sophia, a feminine intuitive aspect of divinity, divine knowledge from within. That said, from the perspective of Sabbateanism, based on the Lurianic Kabbalah, which I cover in my book 1666, the esoteric interpretation of salvation was not about redemption of the Jewish people from slavery amongst other people, but instead had to do with an inner salvation, an esoteric process of mystical healing and restoration of one's own soul through a term called Tikkun Olam, which means repairing the world, and has to do with the Lurianic Kabbalah's idea of freeing leftover divine sparks of light that permeated existence after creation. This brings us to Jacob Frank, a Polish-born Jew who 100 years after Sabbatai's death claimed to be his reincarnation. Frank was initiated into the Sabbatean elite, where the highest esoteric secrets were revealed to him that were shared only orally. These occult practices were the basis for erotic inner alchemy, tantric practices of energetic transmutation, where carnal lust is converted into spiritual gold, or what is known in the East as chi, prana, ether, vril, or life force energy. Through these techniques, Frank allegedly developed psychic medium skills, through which he allegedly revealed many secrets and mysteries to his followers. continuing the tradition of strange deeds that was so critical for the foundation of Sabbateanism, such as ritualistic orgies, public nudity and affection, and other transgressions. From 1759 to 1760, Frank inspired the mass conversion of his followers into Christianity, following in the footsteps of Sabbatai Zevi's conversion into Islam, infusing this ancient heretical Kabbalistic teaching into the mainstream by establishing sects of Christian Sabbateans. Frank was then arrested and spent the following 12 years in captivity. This began a new and completely unexpected phase of Sabbatean Frankism, where Frank interacted with the cult of the Black Madonna and taught that there was no separation between the Messiah, God, and Shekinah, which is a word that implies the dwelling place or divine presence of God, such as the burning bush or the pillar of fire in the Bible. But in Hebrew, it is a feminine word, and in this context means the divine feminine presence of God, or in other words, goddess, the mystical embodiment of the feminine, or God's bride, implying that female sexuality was a doorway to higher states through which one can commune with the divine. That said, Frank taught that the Messiah was female, and that the Virgin Mary and Messiah were essentially the same principle, a concept which has its roots in ancient Babylon and initially found its way into Europe via the Templars. To put it into a nutshell, unlike Christianity, Frankism was not about a male god who took a human body upon himself through a human woman, but about a feminine goddess who acquired a human form. Frank appropriated elements of Catholic Mariology, but departed from Christian doctrine in two crucial respects. He claimed that the maiden was an element of the Godhead, and he declared that she was actually present in the Black Madonna icon. When Frank was finally released from captivity in 1772, he had regained a large fellowship and was again recognized as one of the most important Sabbatean leaders in Europe. However, in truth, he had moved on from many of the original teachings of Sabbatai Zevi and founded his own female cult of divine worship, as well as a strong outer circle of military defense. While in 1750s and 1760s, Frankism was first perceived as a sect within Judaism and then as a movement on the border between Judaism and Christianity, its expansion in 1770s and 1780s was defined by the reformulation of its tenets in terms of something that can best be called a secret society. Jacob Frank then moved in with his Sabbatean cousin in the Bohemian section of the Czech Republic, renowned for her physical beauty, and encountered her son, Moses Dobruska, who was 18 at the time, and a Sabbatean from birth who went on to become a founding member of the sect known as the Asiatic Brethren that I mentioned earlier. Frank developed strong connections into the Masonic communities of Vienna, as well as into Germany. Freemasons and secret societies during this period were interested in rediscovering the ancient wisdom and purported truth hidden in the Jewish or Kabbalistic mystery tradition, which the Knights Templar brought into Europe from their time in the Middle East. Esoteric knowledge that was passed down by the Magi, veiled by the European alchemists, and orally transmitted by the Gnostics and mystics. Jacob Frank also taught the mystery of Edom, which means red in Hebrew, and is in reference to the Edomites, a largely red-haired demographic that was converted into Judaism in the 2nd century BC, and I covered in my video called Magicians of the Temple. Which brings us to the Rothschilds, which translates to Red Shield in German, who financed and formed, along with Adam Weishaupt and Jacob Frank, the Order of the Illuminati. After Jacob Frank passed away, lodges of the Asiatic Brethren were formed in Vienna in 1781 and then in Prague, Hamburg, Berlin, and Frankfurt, where many powerful members were among their ranks, including the future King of Prussia, Frederick Wilhelm II. This order has spread from Italy to Russia already. The ruling heads of this order were unknown until 1788. They refer to Masonry as their basis. They even call it its nursery of their entire system. Their gatherings they call Malzisiek Lodges and offer their services to include Jews, Turks, Persians, and Armenians. The order's teachings include how to govern the spirits by breaking the seven seals, and one is taught how to produce miracle cures and how to create gold. The order expects blind faith and blind obedience. Its regulations are the true teaching of the sons of Loyola. Incidentally, Ignatius of Loyola was the Basque founder of the religious order of the Society of Jesus, also known as the Jesuit order. Independent from the Freemasons and Rosicrucians of the time, the Asiatic Brotherhood claimed a similar ancient lineage to the East in association with the Templars. The term Asia in this context, however, is not a reference to the landmass that we've come to call Asia today, but a vague reference to Asia Minor that indicates a tradition that doesn't stem from the European mainland, but from the Orient. In particular, the Aryan Magi of ancient Iran, who Albert Pike claimed was the true Chaldean originators of the pre-Jewish, pre-Arabic, and pre-Babylonian Kabbalah. In the view of the Asiatic Brethren, the Kabbalah should not be based on any particular religion, but rather formed an open path for anybody interested, be they Muslim, Catholic, or Jewish, to transcend the limitations of one's own religious tradition and to gain access to the quote, one and only true, pure, and all-embracing religion. The Asiatic Brethren established two streams of teachings, one in writing and a second, more closely guarded, of individual oral instructions. This sect had a great influence on later magical and theosophic orders. In the instructions of these rituals, we learn that the order is the continuation of a very ancient alchemical, theosophical, and magical tradition transmitted over centuries through various channels, not least the Knights Templars. We find, among other mythical narratives, a vivid description of the original fall, in which a son of Dawn, or Lucifer, plays a major part. The symbolism of these rituals resonates with those of the Gold und Rosenkreuz, which interpreted the first degree of regular Masonic symbols in an alchemical sense. The Asiatic Brethren were set apart from the Rosicrucian traditions of the same time in that they were much less influenced by and oriented towards Orthodox Christianity. And although they were open to Jews among their members, their legendary founding myth was also unique and was set up from the beginning to provide a platform for occult learning, teaching, and practical research hidden from the realm of influence and control of Orthodox Christianity, or Jewry for that matter. That said, the order embraced a multitude of paths towards divine gnosis through a combination of natural sciences, numerology, practical or spiritual alchemy, Kabbalah, and sex magic. Many of the order's ancient tantric techniques of erotic alchemy and sex energy transmutation found their way into what became other sects, with a possible influence on the Siberian mystic Rasputin, who pronounced that the best way to reach a divine state was through the sexual exhaustion that came after prolonged debauchery. He was best known for befriending the imperial family of Nicholas II, the last emperor of Russia, and for a Sabbatean-like philosophy of redemption through sin, which involved orgiastic rituals of bliss and prolonged orgasmic euphoria. These occult techniques also made their way into other European esoteric orders, such as the Vril Society, which was headed by the medium Maria Orsic, who was said to have used transmuted Vril energy to achieve clairvoyance and mediumship. Vril is a word used to describe energy gained through heightened states achieved through the harnessing of prana, chi, or ether, all terms that describe a life force energy that permeates the universe and all living things. The Vril Society was eventually absorbed into the National Socialist Party, which funded research into various occult practices with the goal of acquiring alternative forms of technology, such as anti-gravitic flight, which it allegedly did achieve, but supposedly did not perfect until the end of the war. Speculation persists around events that took place in Antarctica, codenamed Operation High Jump, when the Allies sent 4,700 armed troops, an aircraft carrier, destroyers, and failed in an attempt to destroy a holdout German base, which allegedly was built below the Antarctic ice. Traces of this occult influence could also be seen in the writings of the notorious sex magician Aleister Crowley, the teachings of Taoist practitioner Montauk Chia, and the alchemical techniques put forth by Samuel Einweyer. The point being that the esoteric information itself does not seem to subscribe to any one type of political or moral philosophy, but seems to resemble the theme in the movie Star Wars, where the Force was the same mystical energy used by the protagonist, Jedi Knight, as was used by the dark side. The Force itself was not considered good or evil, but was more like an element of nature that can be harnessed for either, depending on the practitioner. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.